copy.
The time is now 10:05, and we will begin the meeting of the District of Columbia Board of Ethics and Government Accountability. My name is Tamika Collier. I will call this meeting to order. I am here with Shamari Wade, Norma Hutchins, and Darren Sobin. We constitute the board, so we in fact do have a quorum. I will move now to the adoption of the November 1st, 2018 meeting minutes. I'll give the board a few minutes to review and comment on any changes. Hearing no comments, all in favor of adoption of the November 1, 2018 meeting minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The meeting minutes have been adopted. We will first move to a report by Director Allen. Good morning.
Madam Chair, can I raise a point first?
Sure.
That's the adoption of the 2019 meeting.
Apologies. I will adopt the agenda. I'll give you a few minutes to look over the agenda as well. Hearing no comments, all in favor of adoption of the agenda for today's meeting, December 19th, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The agenda has been adopted.
Adopt 2019 meeting schedule.
Oh, you want to do that too? I do have comments on that. You turn to the meeting schedule for 2019. The first meeting is scheduled for January the 3rd. Board members, I propose we move that. The lobbyist filing registration runs from January 1 through the 10th, and I would like to get a report, given that it is a new system, at the January meeting and resolve any potential issues. So I propose that we move the meeting to January the 14th is a Monday. I don't know if we need to stick with Thursdays. We can do January the 10th, which is the Thursday. If there are going to be issues, they would have presented by the 10th, but 10th?
Yeah, I got a management meeting at 10 a.m. I could do the afternoon if you want to do the afternoon, or noon.
That works.
Noon?
Noon works.
Noon's good.
So we are amending the schedule to change the January 3rd meeting to January 10th. Beginning at noon, February 7th is the next proposed date. Any issues?
One second. Oh, looks good.
March the 7th. Any issues?
Actually, Madam Chair, that would be a conflict for me. I have something with my daughter I need to be at on the 7th.
What about the 14th?
14th is fine.
I can call in.
If we do that again, it needs to be noon again. That's Thursdays, on the second Thursdays are my monthly management meetings.
I can call in.
And you can do noon, Darren?
I can do noon.
The March 7th, 2019 meeting will be moved to March the 14th, beginning at noon. April 4th, any issues? May 2nd, any issues? June the 6th, any issues?
Nope.
I propose we move the July 4th meeting to July 11th. Any issues?
It would have to be at noon again because that's my monthly management meeting.
To July 11th at noon. August 1st.
Good.
September 5th, any issues?
No issues.
October 3rd, any issues?
No issues.
November 7th, any issues? And let's leave the December 5th as it is, but we anticipate we will move it so that it coincides with the holiday luncheon. All right, I move we adopt the 2019 schedule of meetings as amended. I hope you wrote those down. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, schedule has been adopted. Thank you, Mr. Flowers. Director Allen, good morning.
Good morning, Chairperson Collier and members of the board. I am Nikkel Allen, the Director of the Office of Open Government, and I am pleased to present this monthly report of the activities of the OOG. The OOG has continued to fulfill its mission of ensuring that all persons receive full and complete information regarding the affairs of the district government and the actions of those who represent them. I'll start the report with Open Meetings Act and Freedom of Information Act advice. The office has not issued any advisory opinions since the last board meeting, but has received three requests for advisory opinions. Two of those requests are for FOIA advisory opinions, and one is for an OMA advisory opinion.
Folks in the government or outside the government?
Both.
Okay.
Moving on to informal OMA FOIA advice. Since November's board meeting, the OOG responses to requests for informal and technical FOIA open meetings advice are as follows. The office has provided 12 FOIA and 4 OMA substantive responses and 4 responses to OMA requests for technical advice. OMA and FOIA audits is the next item. The OOG is currently auditing public bodies' DC.gov websites for compliance with the OMA. A preliminary FOIA audit of DC.gov was recently completed, and the OOG will report the preliminary results to the Mayor's General Counsel and the Office of the Chief Technology Officer next month. The office will work with both to correct any deficiencies. And I will update this report to the board as well with the results and put that in the Dropbox for your review.
How's it going so far? Like, are you seeing any trends?
I think what's going on is the mayor's office has centralized a lot of this information. Budget, for example, is not on a lot of the websites because there's a central budget site. I think that can be corrected by having DC.gov FOIA tabs reference that page. And I think it's just an update problem. That's the main trend I've been seeing. So we need to work with OCTO to make sure information is updated and that there's, I'm not sure what the communication is between the agencies and OCTO, but I will find that out through the Mayor's General Counsel.
Okay.
Okay, moving on to fiscal year 2020 budget. We don't have any updates on the OOG's budget enhancement request at this time, but the OOG and OGE will continue to work on the fiscal year 2020 budget. Training and outreach. On November 5th, 2018, the OOG's attorney, Johnny Barton, conducted an OMA training for the Board of Funeral Home Directors. On November 29th, 2018, the OOG director, myself, completed a brief training for the newly reconstituted Child Support Guideline Commission. I trained the new commissioners, which included Councilmember Allen, on the office's role and their obligations, on our office's role, and their obligations under the Open Meetings Act. On December 12th, 9th through 12th, Attorney Barton and I, along with the Office of Open Government Ethics Attorneys and the Board Senior Attorney Advisor, attended the 40th Conference on Government Ethics in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Attorney Barton.
I know it's well attended. It's like industry standard, but did you get anything out of it?
Yeah, how about a quick recap?
Well, it was very interesting from a FOIA perspective. There was a lot of emphasis on how the law has changed in this application, given that it was instituted in 1978, and now we're moving into, you know, we're in the 21st century. So there are a lot of challenges in implementing the FOIA law with respect to across jurisdictions. With respect to, you know, the technology that we have now and all the data we're collecting. So there was a lot of emphasis on that. So there were several presentations. There are also presentations on new technology that's available for addressing that problem on the FOIA side. There was also a very interesting presentation that Attorney Ford and I attended on, actually on Watergate, to talk to, so it gave a good background about why the FOIA law was created and where we are today with it, as well as ethics laws. So I found that to be very informative.
Any takeaways for DC?
Looking at Pennsylvania, of course they were heavily represented because they hosted the conference. They have instituted some novel things on the FOIA side that I think I would like to reach out to my counterparts there and see if we can adopt some of those things in the district from a technology perspective. I asked about, with open meetings, the thoughts about using social media and other platforms to have meetings. And the presenter from Philadelphia, they have not implemented that. But, you know, the thought on that is it may be a challenge to make sure that the open meetings laws are accounted for in that context, though the public, especially our younger public, is looking for that type of service from the government to be able to participate on that level. So, you know, I would like to explore some more best practices about meetings on that platform and see if that's something that's feasible for the district or something that we should be looking into.
Okay.
The next matter, I served as an instructor and participated in the National Association of Attorneys General Training and Research Institute's National Ethics Summit on December 11th and 13th. So I was kind of doing double duty. I left Philly and flew to Arizona. I presented an hour-long course titled Managing the Freedom of Information Process. The presentation focused on the challenge of meeting the FOIA requirements for processing FOIA requests in the digital age, similar to the conference I attended previously. The District of Columbia Attorney General and the Office of the Attorney General's Ethics Attorney also presented at the Ethics Summit. And I found the group that was in my training, they were very engaged in looking at what the district is doing in the area of FOIA. They were especially interested in hearing our experiences with FOIA Express, and even some, well, they're looking to find out if the district has found a solution to automating the process for privilege review, which we have not, but
right.
Even the law firm level, they don't have anything for that. So
they don't have anything either.
Right. So hopefully there'll be a developer who'll come up with that in the future that would make everyone's life a lot easier.
Who's your audience?
Attorneys general, assistant attorneys general from across the United States.
And where was this held?
It was at the law school, the Sandra Day O'Connor School of Law at Arizona State University.
Oh, okay.
So it was great audience participation. I really enjoyed it.
NAGTREE puts together a good program.
And Miles Link, who's a professor there, was a fellow at the Office of the Attorney General, so that's how he reached out to this office, and we participated.
Oh, nice.
Good. Very good.
Okay. The OOG, in connection with the DC Bar, has completed its first short film segment, which serves as an introduction of what the OOG does. It is currently published on the OOG website. The DC Bar has completed editing the full film, which I will review and receive this week. The OOG looks forward to sharing the video with the board and releasing it to the public in the near future.
I did see the intro. Okay. Very nice. Very nice.
Can we see it at the next meeting?
Yes. Yes. I'll make sure I'm getting it this week. You know, I did. It's difficult watching oneself on film, but I've kind of gotten used to it. But I've really enjoyed working with the DC Bar. They've been very, very helpful, and the production team is wonderful. So
good.
Thanks, Darren.
Sure. you guys are our beta testers.
Yes, yes.
I do have one question, and this follows on something that Councilmember Allen asked us at one of the last oversight hearings, and that's about closed captioning.
Yeah.
For the introduction, it's not a bigger issue because I think you basically read what was already on the website.
Right.
But is there a possibility to explore closed captioning as we move forward with your videos, and also if there are any more Miss Ethics videos, having that as an option?
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful idea and something that we will implement. I'll look into to getting that done. The video that's currently there is on YouTube, and there is a captioning feature embedded in YouTube itself. So I'll take a look at that and see if there's a way to lock it into that video in the short term without getting some outside application to do that. Okay, and the last item, the OOG director participated in the mayor's cabinet meeting. A highlight from that is the director of Small and Local Business Development presented small business enterprise goals for FY 2019, where they basically talked about the spend goals for the upcoming for this fiscal year. Renowned District of Columbia chef and restaurateur Jose Andres spoke to the cabinet about his efforts to rebuild Puerto Rico, local business development in the district, and immigration.
Well, congratulations. Getting invited back to the mayor's cabinet meetings is no small accomplishment.
Thank you. I was well received, and seeing the meeting went well. It was a soft meeting, I would say, this time. Next is rulemaking. The Office of Open Government has submitted for consideration by the board new and revised regulations to implement the recent changes in the law, and also makes clarifying amendments to the OOG's regulations at 3 DCMR section 10400.
And we will take a look at that. I think Attorney Ford is looking at those and has some questions for you all.
Okay.
But that's not something we want to sit on.
Okay. We'll continue to work with her to get a good draft back to you. And the last item is staffing. On Friday, December 14th, 2018, the OOG bade farewell to its IT and applications engineer, Wada Kitab. We wish Wada the very best in his new career endeavor. The announcement to fill the position left vacant by Wada, well, we thought it was posted on December 18th, but it should be posted today, and will run through January 18th, 2019.
And what's the plan for filling his duties in the interim? And if we need to go in closed section and talk about personnel, we can, but generally, how are we going to meet the IT needs?
We're looking to work with Octo, with Octo Helps, on an as-needed basis to just fulfill the role. I think we'll explore some more in January as far as his the position's specific functions with respect to the board meetings and meetings. I think that will be we can manage with the website, I believe, through Octo. I can talk to them and see if they can make our updates. I have mentioned it to the web manager, the assistant CTO who's in charge of that has been on vacation, is not back yet. So once he returns, I'm going to talk about the website with him, which is really the main thing for OOG, is to make sure that's updated and the meeting minutes and everything are there. We probably need to make sure we we are publishing the written ones. I think we have a handle on the video, but, you know, this will be our first meeting when it's Johnny and I working on getting that on the website, so we'll see how it goes.
I have faith in you both.
Thank you. and that concludes the OOG Director's Report for December 19th, 2018. Thank you.
Thank you. I do have one question. You all were working on document retention policies. I'm specifically interested in the ones that impact the board, any guidance to the board. What's the status on that?
I will have to defer to Director Wolfenbarg for that.
I can wait until his brief. That's fine.
Yeah, we are doing it together.
Yeah, while it's fresh in my mind, it's basically been put on the back burner since the interns left. The DOP interns were taking the lead in that. They had prepared some materials for our review, but with the acquisition of the new case management system, getting it up and running, I haven't had a chance to circle back and look at the document retention project.
Okay. That's fine. Okay. Thank you, Director Allen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Brent Wolfenbarger. I'm the Director of Government Ethics, and this is an update on the status of our operations, a recap of the previous month's activities. It's important to note that these reported statistics do not take into consideration anticipated changes that may occur as a result of the board's actions today. This is a snapshot of where things stood yesterday. We have currently 31 open investigations, one of which is at the show cause hearing status. When we set up the new case management system, we wanted to provide a little better insight to the board regarding exactly what stage different investigations are, because open could be from the, you know, the first day that you open it up and you've just started an investigation versus at the end where you're conducting negotiations with a respondent or you're getting ready to do a show cause hearing. So we'll be able to slice and dice the statuses of the open investigations to provide the board with greater granularity moving forward. Pending state investigations by status, there's a total of 23, 10 of which are closed pending collection. So the investigation is done, the adjudication is done, but the respondents still owe the board money from imposed fines. And that's a new statistic that we have not been reporting previously. So I think that it's important to kind of keep that in our mind to explore options and possibly taking different actions to collect that, or at some point coming to the board and saying, we don't believe we're going to be able to collect this, and figuring out how to write it off of our book, so to speak. There are three investigations that are closed pending appeal to the D.C. Court of Appeals or the D.C. Superior Court. And then there are 10 state investigations. Two are stayed because of OAG False Claims Act cases. Five are stayed because of OIG criminal investigations. One is stayed due to an other court case, and two are stayed due to U.S. District Court cases. That's a new status that we've added. In the past, a lot of the cases were still lumped in as being pending due to an OIG investigation. And in instances where someone has already been arrested and pled guilty and they're waiting sentencing, I don't think it's really fair to say that the case is still pending because the OIG is investigating it. So again, we wanted to provide a little greater granularity and clarity to the board regarding exactly where things stand.
Okay.
We've also added some statistics regarding the status of our regulatory matters. There is a total of 32, 25 of which, again, are pending collection. Those are lobbyist fines or financial disclosure non-compliance fines. There's one that's closed pending a respondent's appeal to the D.C. Superior Court. Three are open on an appeal to me, and three are open on appeals to the board.
Okay. I'm not following the three. Are we going to discuss those today? I know one. We are. Okay. We can move on.
Okay. There's another blurb of statistics at the bottom of the page regarding the way we reported statistics in the past, where we would show investigations that are currently open, investigations that are stayed inactive, comparing it month versus month as well as the previous month. We currently have 31 open investigations, which is decreased from 35 last month and 35 in October, and the number of state investigations has remained the same.
Okay.
Publication and reporting obligations. We are in the process of preparing the quarterly complaint report for the first quarter of fiscal 19. And although we did not adopt any new performance measures for fiscal 19, we have identified new statistics related to our regulatory enforcement matters and audits that we will report in fiscal 20. And we have begun to keep track of those statistics internally during fiscal 19 to use as a benchmark for comparison purposes next year. And we provided a draft of those updates to the Dropbox for the board's review. It's my understanding that they were attachments to an MSG file, so we'll update that to make sure that the board has the opportunity to review those. But they were largely created after looking at some statistics that the Office of Campaign Finance reports for performance measures regarding the number of audits, the timeliness of the audits, and things of that nature. Training outreach. We sent three employees from the Office of Government Ethics to the Council on Government Ethics Laws COGL conference last week. And they reported that they enjoyed the experience and found it pretty useful.
Any takeaways for DC?
Who went?
it was Rochelle, Ashley, and Asia.
Good morning, board. This is my first COGL experience, and I loved it. One of the trends that I saw in a lot of the sessions was a move towards lumping in sexual harassment matters into ethics. So the different jurisdictions were, you know, kind of trying to pivot and figure out how they are going to incorporate sexual harassment into their program. I attended a lobbyist training. It was an update about the different things that were going on in the different jurisdictions. That was really interesting, and they have a large book with all of the different jurisdictions and the updates. I can't really remember.
Did they get our information right in there this year?
Actually, they missed some of our information. They mentioned us on the lobbyist side. They talked about our recent updates to our recent statutory updates in the lobbyist arena. But overall, it was a really good experience, and it was kind of good to get a benchmark to see where we are in our program and see, A, are we doing this right, and to also talk to other ethics professionals. So in my book, it was excellent.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Trainings conducted by the staff. Since the date of the last meeting, we conducted or participated in 9 trainings, 3 more than last month. The 9 trainings consisted of 4 new employee orientations, 2 monthly ethics trainings, and 3 full ethics trainings at the Department of Parks and Recreation. Regarding an initiative that the board has asked about in the past is the Bega Roadshow. I've actually done some research and created a spreadsheet with all of the meeting dates, locations, and times for all of the ANCs. We discussed it at our staff meeting this past Monday. We're going to try to start hitting like 2 or 3 of those a month, and we'll rotate responsibility amongst the attorneys to do those at times that are convenient for the ANCs, assuming that they do want to hear from us. And we'll coordinate with Director Allen regarding the OOG's participation in those meetings as well.
Excellent. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Also, I am scheduled to participate in a panel discussion on January 14th at the TRB, which is the Transportation Resources Board, something like that. It's an industry organization related to government agencies that deal with transportation issues. There's going to be like 13,000 people at the conference. It's filling up the conference center here in Washington, D.C., and the panel presentation is going to be about creating an ethical culture in an organization, and we will probably be showing some of the Miss Ethics videos as part of that presentation. newsletter. OGE's December newsletter has been published on BEGA's website. And once the holiday season is behind us, we will schedule a meeting with the Mayor's Communications Director, Anu Rangappa, to coordinate sending an upcoming newsletter to all DC government employees distribution list per our previous discussions with the Mayor's office. And when I looked at my notes, the communication we received from the Mayor's office indicated that we'll send this out one time to the all distribution list with an option for employees to subscribe to the list. And then from then on, we would distribute it to anyone who subscribed, as well as to the individual agency ethics officers, for them to then distribute to their own agencies.
Excellent.
Good idea.
So I went to the website, looked at the newsletter, and then I went to the Twitter. I don't have Twitter, but the account is open, so I follow both of you periodically. And there was one comment for the last newsletter about investigating someone that the board has no jurisdiction over.
Okay.
And so it got me wondering whether either director has a policy in place for how to respond to social media. I don't think that particular inquiry raised to the level of a complaint under the Ethics Act, but you may want to consider how you respond to things like that, whether it's simply responding with a link to the BEGA website on how you file a complaint. But if you're going to have a social presence, I think you're going to have to respond in some way, or at least have a policy on how you handle people from the public commenting, you should investigate this person. I'm raising a complaint about this issue. It may not squarely fit into our complaint process.
Absolutely. Makes sense.
And Chairman Collier, that's what I've been doing. I've been responding to the comment with our contact information to log a complaint. So that's OOG's policy, is to just respond to the comments with, not substantively, but giving them the information to contact us.
Great. That's great.
Advisory opinions, advice. Informal advice, approximately 113 were issued since the board's last meeting, which is higher than the 60 reported at the last meeting.
Do you have a breakdown, like categories?
We don't. It's probably something that we could dig into. That's part of the reason why we're trying to create the new database for the opinions that we've issued. WADA was working on that, and he indicated to me on Friday that the project was about 55% done as far as the structuring of the database. One thing that Director Allen and I will need to take into consideration in vetting candidates to replace WADA is the skill set that they have, whether they would be able to pick up on a task like that, creating a database, or if that's something that we would have to farm out to somebody else.
Okay.
But the case management system, for what it's worth, does have the capability, and we are currently slicing and dicing the areas that our investigations are open in. And the last time I checked, of the 31 open investigations, we have 13 are regarding conflict of interest. One is financial disclosure violations, gifts and donation violation. I mean, we can slice it and get a pretty good idea of what we're looking at. And moving forward, the plan is to also analyze on an agency-by-agency breakdown what complaints we see in different agencies to try to tailor our educational outreach to those agencies based on the problems we're seeing. Formal advice requests. We received one formal request for post-employment advice that is still pending. The question raises whether a building permit, certificate of occupancy, and zoning proceeding constitute the same or different particular matters in connection with whether a former employee is permitted to serve as an expert witness in a current proceeding. Ethics Legislation, Comprehensive Code of Conduct. On December 4th, the Council approved on final reading Bill 22-0107, the Campaign Finance Reform Amendment Act of 2018. As it pertains to BEGA, the legislation clarifies that all members of boards and commissions who are confirmed by the Council must undergo ethics training within 90 days of commencing service, and that employees who are designated under the Local Hatch Act to engage in partisan political fundraising may do so only while on annual or unpaid leave.
Just one point on that again for both offices. You both are working on ways of tracking commissioners, board members, and others who have yearly or quarterly requirements. You might want to join efforts in terms of technology for keeping that, because you both are relying on some of the same people, whether it's MOTA for that type of information.
Is the legislation going to have any financial impact on us?
I don't believe so.
I mean, it seems to me we're already doing the trainings, right?
Correct.
So
it'd just be a question of outreach to make sure that the board and commission members are aware of when the trainings are going to be.
Right. There's no one. I think the issue is there's no one tracking it. So it's probably fair to say that some board members and commissioners are not getting trained within 90 days. They aren't receiving annual training because there's no one tracking it.
As I understand it, though, they don't get their email address until they certify that they've completed their training. At least that's the way it used to be, their DC.gov email address.
That I got my
really?
Email. In fact, I've never certified that I went through training. I did training, but I've never certified that.
Hmm. Okay.
Rulemaking. We have no new developments to report on rulemaking. Budget. Mr. Kitab and I triaged and uploaded the data related to all matters open, pending, and closed from ProLaw into our CMTS live system the past few weeks. I'm still conducting my quality assurance testing of the import, but so far everything looks good. I plan to quality control the contents of 160 randomly selected cases that were imported into CMTS last weekend to obtain a statistically valid assessment before reaching a final conclusion that the project was completed successfully. But the first 40 that I've looked at, I've only seen like two errors, and they're completely my fault. It was just human error that there was information present in the system that I did not put into the database. So it's not an import function, it's a human error function.
Is everyone trained up?
Pardon?
Is everyone trained up on how to use the new system?
Yes, to an extent. We're scheduling a follow-up webinar, a refresher, in the beginning of January when the new employees come aboard. We had a session in September, and we have been learning as we go, but we definitely need another follow-up training session so that we can make full use of the new system. Part of the data migration project actually involved capturing information that was available in PDF documents stored in ProLaw and the shared drive and inputting that relevant information into the structured data fields we imported into CMTS. For instance, in several instances, the ProLaw database did not contain any information related to the DC employee or public official who was the subject of our investigation or the complainant. That information was available in PDFs and other documents, but it wasn't searchable because it wasn't in the database. And so as I was working on the data migration project, I made a point to try to capture as much of that information as possible and turn it into structured fields so that it was imported into the new system. The last phase of the data migration project will involve importing the digital files from ProLaw and in some instances from the shared drive into CMTS. Those additional services were not covered by our contract to purchase the software, and we have requested a purchase order be issued so that the vendor can submit an invoice and begin working on that phase of the project. We hope to have that last phase of the project completed within the next few weeks. WADA, before he left, mapped out the locations of all of the files and how they are tied to individual cases. They could not be moved into the new system until all of the cases were created in the new system. So it's kind of a two-step process. He's left me instructions on how to get that those files imported into CMTS, and the additional fees that Wingswept is charging for those services were very reasonable compared to what I had seen in my research of other systems. Some of the vendors were trying to charge $30,000, $50,000, $150,000 to do that document migration, and it's going to cost us less than $10,000 to have Wingswept do it.
Okay.
What? Just for IT challenge people.
Sure.
What is this new system going to do different than ProLaw that really justifies the cost and the trouble of going through getting it?
To me, it does a number of different things. Number one, it automatically sends out notifications to staff members when there's a document awaiting their review, or if there has not been any investigative activity on a case for a period of 14 days. I get a daily email from the system on all cases where there have been no investigative activity reflected in the system for 14 days. So that serves as a trigger for me to follow up with the assigned team members to say, hey, what's going on? It's a way to provide structure and to keep things from falling off the back burner. Another example is that, for instance, motions and notices that the director is required to sign. The way we've always done it historically is staff members will email a copy to the director. Director prints it out, signs it, or staff member prints it, director signs it. Then that has to be scanned, put in, and uploaded. And the new system allows electronic signature. So the employee can assigns the document to me in CMTS, I get the notification, I download it, review it, make any edits that I want to make, and I can insert an electronic signature, save it, and it's ready to go. So it saves a good bit of busy work that allows the staff to focus more of their effort on, what we pay them to do, which is conduct investigations and enforce our regulatory mandates.
All right.
Let's see here. Okay. And last month, Director Allen and I coordinated to submit 8 separate budget enhancements for fiscal 20, which were uploaded to the Dropbox for review. Again, I believe they were attachments to an MSG, so we'll make arrangements to get those to you in a different format. We met with the city administrator's office probably about 4 or 5 days after we submitted those documents, explained the rationale. They've asked for some additional information from us regarding the square footage that we have. They recognize that the agency has a legitimate need for more space. It's just a question of finding the budgetary resources to provide that when historically we've not been budgeted anything for our office space. We're also going to meet with DGS after the holidays to talk about our preference to stay in One Judiciary Square rather than go somewhere else. It's my understanding from talking to our agency financial officers from OFRM that there is another agency that is moving out of One Judiciary Square, so we're going to try to make a strong case to have a claim for that space.
Okay.
And was that only one of the budget enhancement requests?
That was only one of the budget enhancement requests.
Did you coordinate all of the budget enhancement requests with the board through the chair?
Yes. Yeah, we kept the chair updated on what our plans were, and right after I submitted the request, I forwarded them to the chair.
And I believe that both directors reported on their individual enhancements last board meeting. I think there were a total of 8.
Yeah, I think when we discussed it at the board meeting, I think we talked about 5, and then after the board meeting, there were 3 relatively small ones that came up that we included in the final submissions. Staffing. We have selected candidates for our 2 permanent positions that are currently vacant, and we anticipate both positions will be occupied on January 7th. These positions are our 3rd investigator position and our compliance specialist position. An offer was accepted by our selection for the investigator position, and he is starting January 7th, and Sandra is working with DCHR to extend an offer to our selection for the compliance specialist by the end of this week. That candidate indicated she needed to provide her current employer 2-week notice. So if we can get it done by the end of this week, then she'd be able to start January 7th as well.
Excellent.
Litigation, status of pending cases. Garen Price, this case was submitted on October 24th, 2018, and we are awaiting the court's decision. Larry Hicks, this is an enforcement collection action filed to reduce the board's $20,000 fine imposed on Mr. Hicks to judgment. Excuse me, the board imposed the fine in February 2014 after a contested hearing. Both Mr. Hicks and the district have filed briefs. The primary issue seemed to be whether the Superior Court should have heard Mr. Hicks's appeal and whether that issue can be brought before the appeals court at this late date. And then Rashawn French versus Bega, D.C. Superior Court case. The employee appealed the imposition of a $600 ministerial fine related to non-filing of financial disclosure statements. The pro se case was filed on April 6th. Mr. French failed to file an opening brief on November 16th, 2018. The case was dismissed for lack of prosecution. Asia's been on top of the case. It's my understanding that his time to file an appeal has expired, and she's going to be working with OPRS to commence garnishment to collect that fine. Lobbying, financial disclosure matters. We still have approximately 200 public financial disclosure statement non-filers. We plan to refocus on FDS enforcement when our new compliance specialist is onboarded in the coming weeks. All council members timely filed their November 2018 PFDS filings except for Council Chair Mendelson. Chair Mendelson was granted a 10-day extension to file his form.
Just really quickly, I understand there was an issue with notice to the council members. Can you update the board on that and address any remediation issues?
Sure. Yeah, when the new FDS system was updated and rolled out last May, it was our understanding that it had been built in with the capacity to allow the council members to file their November reports in the electronic system. I know that the lobbyist system is being configured so that basically lobbyists would be able to file their reports at any time as opposed to being locked into a rigid schedule. So if they wanted to file December 30th, for some reason, they would be able to do that. But apparently, they had not built in that capability. When I talked to Octo on the eve of the notification going out, it was clear that they would not be able to make the system changes necessary to allow council members to file electronically. So I made the decision to keep the system in place that was followed last year and have the council members file hard copy.
Okay.
Financial disclosure waiver requests pursuant to DC Official Code 1-1162.21A3, anyone adversely affected for a civil penalty imposed under Section 221 of the Ethics Act may appeal said penalty to the Ethics Board. And there are three waiver requests for the board's consideration. I have Asia address those.
Good morning again, board members.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The first matter is number 19-0004-R, Jill Forbes. This matter was tabled at last month's meeting. On October 11th, 2018, respondent requested a waiver of the $300 fine levied against her by the Office of Government Ethics due to her failure to timely file her 2017 public financial disclosure statement. The respondent asked that her fine be waived because she recently separated from district government employment and moved to Massachusetts, and she did not receive her notice of this year's filing requirement. Respondent also noted a history of timely completion of her financial disclosure filing requirements. Respondent filed her 2017 PFDS on October 15, 2018. At this time, the Office of Government Ethics does not oppose this request.
Any questions from the board?
No.
In matter 19-0004, Jill Forbes, all those in favor of granting the waiver request, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
The next matter is number 19-0009R, L.V. Moore. On November 29, 2018, respondent requested a waiver request of a $300 fine levied against her by the Office of Government Ethics due to her failure to timely file her 2017 public financial disclosure statement. Respondent asked that her fine be waived because she resigned her post as a commissioner of the Commission on the Arts and Humanities due to extended international travel. Respondent also noted that she was advised, possibly by the commission, that she was no longer required to file the form. Respondent filed the form on December 5th, 2018. The Office of Government Ethics does not oppose respondent's request.
Any questions from the board? All those in favor in matter 19-0009, Elvi Moore, all those in favor of granting the waiver request, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Waiver request granted. Thank you.
The final fine request matter is number 19-0010R, Ivan Ortiz. Actually, his full name is Ivan Ortiz Torres. On November 26, 2018, respondent requested a waiver of the $300 fine levied against him by the Office of Government Ethics due to his failure to file to timely file his 2017 public financial disclosure statement. Respondent asked that his fine be waived because he was under the impression that he had not been designated to file for this year, and because he did not receive the Office of Government Ethics notices that we had been sending to him over the course of the filing period and afterwards. At this time, we're recommending that the board table this matter until next month. Mr. Torres has not yet filed his form, and that's partially due to my error with his email address. His email address needed to be updated in the system. I thought that he had the correct email address, so I updated his email address in the system probably 2 or 3 days ago. So we're just suggesting that we table this until next month to make sure that he files.
Okay, we'll table it till next month.
Thank you. That concludes the financial.
I'm sorry. What's the guy's name?
Ivan Ortiz Torres.
So I'm looking at the. It looks like he submitted it with his waiver request.
Right. He did submit a hard copy, but we don't accept hard copies. He has to file in the filing system, which I did tell him.
Okay. So you want to table it till next month?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, please. Thank you, board members.
For the record, I'm looking through his written submission, and it does not seem to have any conflicts stated.
Excellent. One thing I did want to point out is the new case numbers that are reflected in the notes. This is a new system put into place for CMTS to make it a little easier to keep track of when cases originate and the type of case they are. So the first two numbers, 19, reflects the fiscal year that the matter was started. The next four numbers are a sequential number just generated when a new matter is created. And the last one, the letter, indicates the type of matter it is. So the R indicates it's a regulatory matter. Regulatory enforcement. An F would be a formal investigation. P is a preliminary investigation, and a C is just a complaint that we've taken in as basically an undocketed matter, and are determining whether to open an investigation or not. And the last letter is an A, which will be for audits.
Okay.
Lobbyist program. We're currently coordinating with the lobbyists in Octo to coordinate four training webinars for the new lobbyist e-filing system this week. We are also gearing up to send the lobbyists their filing period notification. As you know, January 1st marks the opening of the 10-day filing period. This will be the lobbyists' first time filing under the new statutory amendments and their first time using our new system. So we want to make sure they are well prepared in advance of the filing period. We're also planning to enter in an MOU with Octo to obtain the full-time services of two IT resources during January to help resolve any customer service issues related to the new system that may arise. It's our understanding that Octo has a pool of qualified IT contractors that it can draw upon to help agencies address emergent IT needs, and I believe this will be a prudent investment from our standpoint. I mean, when you look at what happened,
agree.
when you look at the FDS rollout, it was very
fraught with difficulty. And there simply weren't enough bodies to throw at it. I mean, Octo, they have a lot of priorities, and they couldn't make our system their number one priority. And, you know, Vegas staff members don't have the technical knowledge to resolve a lot of those customer service issues. So the plan is to pay to have those IT sources available to focus on Vegas issues for Vegas customers.
Yeah. We have the resources, the funds?
Yes, absolutely.
It's absolutely, especially since the new WADA won't be hired by
them. If nothing else, we have OTAPE funds, which is a whole separate issue. I think that's great. I'm a little concerned that lobbyists haven't had training and notice yet if the period opens January 1.
Correct. I mean, it was one of those things where in order for the system to go live, Octo had to do some security testing. I had to approve it to go to the next level of security testing. They completed their security testing, and I believe it was really only able to function live about 2 weeks ago. So we met with Mark McDermott probably about 10 days ago to talk about Mark McDermott from Octo. He's the lead developer of both the FDS and the lobbyist systems, to talk about outreach and how we would roll out the system. We decided that we wanted to have webinar-based trainings so that lobbyists would not have to come to a physical location to get that training. And that required some coordination between Ashley, who's our training coordinator and knows about our WebEx or GoToMeeting subscriptions, and to get on the same page with Mark regarding his availability. We booked a room at OPRS, which is the same room we did our case management system training in, because Octo's facility, to be quite honest, their training room is very antiquated, and I was concerned that if any lobbyists that did want to participate in person tested the system on those old computers, they could have some a suboptimal experience, which could cause us problems down the road. So getting all of those pieces in place took some coordination. I would have liked to have done it earlier in December, but late is better than never.
Okay.
Non-confidential investigations. First case is number 1634-001, In re Rochelle Wilson.
At the conclusion of our preliminary investigation of Ms. Wilson, OGE determined that she violated the code of conduct by failing to file fully completed PFDS forms that truly and accurately reflected her and her spouse's business interests, activities, and positions with outside organizations for calendar years 2014, 2015, and 2016 before the annual May 15th deadlines in 2015, 2016, and 2017. We fined Ms. Wilson $2,750 for these violations. She responded to the order, the fine order, by inquiring about her appeal rights and a payment plan. We advised Ms. Wilson that we would grant her a payment plan by way of a negotiated disposition. We have finalized the negotiated disposition to resolve Ms. Wilson's failure to file, and she signed the document on Monday. OGE requests that the board approve the negotiated disposition at this time.
Before we get to discussion of her specifically, I have a question on process. Previously, for both the confidential and non-confidential investigations brought to the board that you wanted us to vote on, say, a negotiated disposition, we got a closing memo of some sort that would identify essentially what you have just said. And I haven't seen any closing memo. So the question is, how are you documenting the thoughts that you just articulated to the board? And I want to make sure there isn't anything in the file that says there's a memo to the board that the board actually has not received.
We haven't done a closing memo. We can do one for purposes of memorializing in the file, but this case has been in all discussed at all of our board meetings for probably the past year. So I thought that you were up to date, but we can certainly do a closing memo, and I can answer any questions that you have.
The closing memo, the benefit of it really was to get pen to paper the investigators and the attorneys' thought process for why they engage in a negotiated disposition. We are very familiar with this case. I want to make sure there are not closing memos in the file that says to the board and the board is not receiving them.
Right. For this case, that is not the case. There's no closing memo, but we will definitely create one. And just to refresh everyone, we moved from doing findings of fact and final order and imposing a ministerial fine to we moved to a negotiated disposition so that Ms. Wilson could benefit from a payment plan because she was concerned about paying the full fine amount, which is what she would have had to do had we just done the fine order.
Sure, that's fine. Any questions about this particular matter?
No questions.
All those in favor of approving the negotiated disposition for matter number 1634-001 in Re Rochelle Wilson, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Disposition approved. Thank you. I can bring them back to you all together.
Next matters are N. Ray Antoine Wilson and N. Ray Jennifer Niles. Pursuant to DC Official Code Section 1-1162.12a, we conducted formal investigations into whether the actions of former Chancellor Antoine Wilson and former Deputy Mayor Jennifer Niles in connection with the Chancellor's daughter's mid-year transfer to an out-of-boundary school during the 2017-2018 school year violated the Code of Conduct. Our team is engaged in negotiations with the respondents regarding the terms of potential negotiated dispositions to resolve these charges, and we anticipate presenting either such agreements or notices of violation for the Board's consideration during its January monthly meeting.
Okay.
Third matter is N. Ray Jack Evans. This formal investigation into allegations that Council Member Evans violated the Council Code of Conduct is currently stayed. That concludes my report.
Thank you. We now have opportunity for public comment. I remind all commenters to keep your comments to 3 minutes or less. Do we have anyone?
No, Madam Chair. Than most. I had a very difficult time getting through to you guys today. You indicate our agreement is I'm to phone in advance of the meeting to be patched through, but there was a recording robocall that kept coming in. I had to go through the Deputy Office of Mayor for Community Affairs to get through. That ought not be, and that certainly is not complying with our agreement. You want other people to pay fines and agree to do the right thing, and yet you are not. Not good. I want to ask a question about Evans. Why is that investigation stayed? And that's been represented now for a couple months. What is the reason it's being stayed? Because of his status as first among equals at the council for 21 years and counting, no term limits? I mean, why? Seems like he's being given preferential treatment.
Mr. Sindrum, with all due respect, I can't really go into the specific reasons why the investigation is stayed. It is still an ongoing investigation, and we've reported the number of investigations that are currently stayed for a variety of reasons. It's a legitimate stay. It's being reported, but I can't go into the details. I apologize.
Recently, there was Ward 4, State Board of Education, special election, and it was reported, matter of public record, that councilman for Ward 4 endorsed a candidate, used his funds, and used his staffers to campaign. I believe that violates your all rules and regs, and there should be some action taken.
Mr. Sinjum, thank you for your comments. If you want to file an official complaint,
some time taken up with response.
If you want to file an official complaint, then you can go through the complaint process, which is available on our website, or Mr. Flowers will be happy to go over the complaint process with you. Thank you for your comment.
One other thing. It was indicated someone attempted to comply hard copy with the disclosure requirement, and you all rejected it summarily. That ought not be. I am cybernetically challenged. If I were required to do online, I couldn't. So all to say that if someone is making a good faith effort to make disclosure, you should accept it, not reject it summarily because it's hard copy and one of your staffers has to do his or her job.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Sinjum. Your time is up. Do we have any other public commenters? Hearing none, we will now, I move to enter into executive non-public session to discuss ongoing confidential investigations pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-575B to consult with an attorney to obtain legal advice and to preserve the attorney-client privilege between an attorney and a public body pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-575B4A to discuss personnel matters, including the appointment, employment, assignment, promotion, performance, evaluation, compensation, discipline, demotion, removal, or resignation of government appointees, employees, or officials pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-575B10, and to deliberate on a decision in which the Ethics Board will exercise quasi-judicial functions pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-575B13. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The time is now 11:10, and we are in executive session. If we could please clear the room. Thank you.
Sorry.
Too happy to
leave. I said that just for you.
Ms. Scott, will you be staying for the holiday meet and greet?
No, I didn't know about it.
You're invited.
Looking at formal investigations, Jack Evans, as the board may recall, we have stayed our investigation at the request of the Office of the Inspector General, which is also investigating this matter. Earlier this morning, a reporter from the Washington Post stopped by my office and showed me some documents that I hadn't seen before, but it's consistent with things that I have seen in the file. He indicates that he's going to be running a story on those documents, and
all right, the time is now 11:58. We are back in public session. We have several matters to report out. We have four negotiated dispositions. In re Janice Waters, case number 1034-005. In re R. Wilson, case number 1634-001. In re Leonard Watson, case number 1449-001. In re Amber Beasley, case number 19-0007. These negotiated dispositions will be posted on the BIGA website within 24 hours. The next board meeting will be January the 10th, beginning at noon. We have
one thing I would like to bring to the chair's attention. We had a conversation afterwards. I wanted to correct one small thing from my report about the filing period for the lobbyist activity report. It was pointed out to me that the legislation changed that to make it a 15-day reporting period, not a 10-day reporting period. So the reporting will continue until January 15th. I don't know if that influences the board's opinion on scheduling the meeting, but I did want to bring it to your attention.
I'm happy with keeping it for January the 10th. Again, if there are any significant issues, they will have presented themselves by that time.
Yep.
All right, we are now adjourned. Exactly at noon. All right, what do y'all need help with?
It's on everything. There's no Tyrell. I'm going to get some help. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, thanks for that.
Are there copies? I saw how much you can roll extra projects.